Blog Talk Radio.
Glowing red in a bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. If only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationships, experience, environment, and genetics all take a hand in molding the people we are today. So, this is Double Helix, where we examine the X's and Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. So get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is the poetry that we are made of. This is Double Helix with Aphasiana and Daniel DeShino. Dex Bailey is away today, so safe travels, Dex. And he will be back eventually. So we miss you, Dex, but I'm very happy to have Dan here with us. We are on Late Night Poets, which is a group on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to be part of the show, but it's more fun if you are, because you can read the poems along with us and comment and talk to us in the chat or call in. Hello, Pee-wee. I see you there on the board. Hi, Dan. How are you today?
Hey, Aphasiana. Hey, Pee-wee on the board. How are you doing? And I should have known this before. I think I knew this, but I just realized that beautiful opening statement I'm assuming you wrote, you read that live every single show, don't you?
Well, Dexter wrote it, to be honest with you.
Dexter wrote it. Okay.
We used to have a recording that was both of us, but when Dexter's not here, it kind of feels silly to have his voice in the opening.
Oh, okay.
So I don't play the recording anymore. Now I read it live.
Oh, okay. I like the live reading. I think it's good. And I'm going to ask a question since I'm here and I get to talk. Where did the opening song come from? Because I do like it, and it's always your opening song. And where did that come from?
It's Anne Peebles, and it's, what's it called now? I think it's, I've found, hold on. Anne Peebles. Dexter actually picked that out. It's one of his favorites.
Okay.
He has very varied taste in music. You know, like, he's a rapper, and that song kind of took me by surprise as one of his favorites. It's called Trouble, Heartaches, and Sadness. But yeah, Dexter was like, we need to have this song. And I liked it. So Dex gets all the credit for picking Anne Peebles, but I do quite enjoy it.
It's a great song, and Pam is on the board. Hello, Pam. It's just fun. I do a show on every other Saturday with Bobby, with Captain B2, and I've been trying to get her to kind of do different songs. It's just something I like to do, so we've been switching off. But most of the shows have theme songs, and for the antithesis of the sister, the partner of ours, which is your other show. One of my favorite phrases in the world now is I've had one too many cigarettes, because that means that your show is starting. I hear that song starting. So it's interesting how you associate it. But yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful song. But I'm so excited to be here today. I've been so busy with work. I've been so busy with just a million things. And I really need to kind of meditate out and read some amazing poetry. So I've been looking forward to the show all day. I honestly have all day, all week I have. So what do we got going on? Absolutely.
We're going to start with the carryovers from your contest that we started last time, where you had taken a picture of, I think, the moon. No, it's a different, it's a planet. What planet is that?
No, it's actually it's a picture. It's just a random picture. It's in Malden, Massachusetts. It's at a Stop and Shop parking lot, which is like just a food chain store, And just everything was really glowing, and it's a very interesting photo. So it is of the moon, even though, from the camera it looks like it's the sun with a black background. But then there's a tiny, tiny little white dot just above to the right of the moon, which is a planet, and I believe it's Venus. There's also a little blue dot to the right, which is just a reflection off of the camera lens. But it was a really good marriage of that, and I just thought it was interesting. So I posted it, and we got some really great poems out of it. But it's that kind of thing always amazes me when you see that. It just, we see the moon and the sun all the time, but when I notice those planets, I just kind of, it comes to mind of just where we are in the universe, and there are other planets that are close by to us that circle us, that are our size or bigger. And I think it's pretty amazing. We think of I think of Venus or Mars is small than ours, or just some of the other planets, and just think there's a whole planet that size still floating around that we've barely begun to discover. So I will stop talking, and we will start thinking about the poetry. But that's what the picture is. It's just a simple picture off of my phone.
Well, I think it's beautiful. I love looking at space. And it's really hard to capture in pictures, I find.
It is.
It's amazing in the moment. And even when the pictures turn out great, it's hard to put it as a singular thing, because it's such an experience to see them outside. And before I get lost in thought about the picture, we have someone to welcome to the show. I'm pretty sure it's Pam. Pam, are you with us?
I am, yes. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Hey, Pam.
Very good to hear you.
Yeah, looks like a great lineup of poetry tonight.
I agree. Now, our first poem is Two Nightlights, and I will give that a read. Let's see.
And Pee Wee on the board said he likes my pictures in general, says usually pulls good stuff out of me, and I'm going to leave that for no disgusting, crazy comments with that thing. But thank you, Pee-wee. I appreciate it. I'm glad good stuff comes out of you, because not so good stuff comes out of me sometimes. But anyway, let's move on. So I'm sorry. It's been a very, very long day. I've been working. I literally just stopped working. I'm not kidding. Like 5 minutes ago when I started at like 8 this morning. It's now 10:10. So 10 minutes ago actually. So. I will have very interesting comments tonight, I think. I'm a little
a little punchy.
Little punchy. Good.
This is Two Night Lights by Maharsha Lani, 1848. There is a sentimental sadness when the works of God across the heaven's stage are canopied to nothing but blank page by countless luminescent works of men. Two only left to fire heart and brain, two lights inciting stories for our age, Selene and Venus, lonely, disengage, until their fellow stars can shine again. For never have I known a group at night to gather in a circle on the ground about the comfort of a lamppost light, referring to the windows all around, inferring shapes and stories from the bright, and finding from their glow something profound. End poem.
That was a great read to start off here. And yeah, I really liked this poem a lot. I not only liked how she was talking about the two night lights there, but brought in other lights as well too, and kind of gave an interesting, reflection on them, right? So when the works of God across the heaven stage are canopied to nothing but a blank page by countless luminescent works of men. I mean, I just thought those first four lines could have been a poem on their own. And I actually remember on one of your Sinner and Saint shows, I remember Babbler talking about light pollution. And you know, as much as light pollution isn't a damaging thing, right, it is something that really takes away from the human experience. I walk a lot at night. I always try to take walks multiple times a day, and that's mostly when I write. And I try to, you know, I live in a city, but I always look up. I always kind of see what's going on up there, and I can still see stars from where I am. But I always, you mentioned this on the last show, because the last show was about stars and the sun. They, you know, you'll go out into the wilderness and the woods or go camping, and you can kind of see everything. And I do remember, you know, I mean, I haven't saw it a lot because I've been in the city a lot of my life, but I do remember, times when I could actually see the Milky Way. You know, you're up, you're looking up, and there's not a lot of light on the horizon, and it's a clear night, especially like in the winter, and you can see the dust of the Milky Way. You can see the glow of it, and it's just a, you know, when you really realize it, it's an amazing experience. And I think it is a sad thing that we've kind of lost the stars in modern society a lot. You know, people in cities, I mean, when I'm in Boston or when I'm in a city, there's nothing. You can't see anything. You know, it's because it's so bright all the time. So you lose the stars completely, which is, you know, whatever spiritual thing you realize, you know, that's all there for a reason, right? The daytime is there, the sun, we can see everything. In the nighttime, the stars are there for us to reflect. I like how she calls the sun, the moon, Selene, which I thought was a great romantic way to do that. But then just talking about the lamppost and kind of all the other lights in general, was really brilliant. But, I wish that there were more ways that people within the megapolis and the big cities of the world could see the stars on a nightly basis. It's something I definitely miss and think about all the time. Pam, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, this is beautifully written. It has a wonderful rhyme and flow, great imagery. I too really like that she used the name Selene for the moon, you know, the goddess of the moon. And, I particularly like near the end where she says, referring to the windows all around, inferring shapes and stories from the bright and finding from their disclose something profound. To me, that really speaks on the idea of how mankind creates mythology and finds deep meaning in the heavens. And so beautifully written and very well done.
Yeah, absolutely. You're very insightful. It is true. We find mythology in a lot of things, but especially, you know, the heavens, which I'm sure always brought wonder to everyone. Speaking of goddesses and wonder, Faziana, let's hear your thoughts.
Flatterer. I really enjoyed this poem, and I especially liked the comparison of the way that people have revered the natural lights compared to how we feel about, you know, man-made lights. For never have I known a group at night to gather in a circle on the ground about the comfort of a lamppost light, referring to the windows all around. Very rarely would we look at artificial light as something profound, whereas that gathering in a circle to appreciate natural light is something. I mean, like, think about, like, even campfires. You gather around it, and there's something very special about those moments. There's, like, a bond of when you're hanging around that. When you look at the sky and it becomes, like, a group thing. There's a lot of kind of hippie-style things where I am, and there are actually several groups who meet at the different stages of the moon and appreciate the moon. And it's kind of like this scandalous thing where people are like, witches, although actually I don't think any of them are. I think there might be a one Wiccan group, but for the most part it's just people appreciating nature. And to think of that as, like, you know, people wouldn't gather around a lamppost in that way. So there's something very special about the natural lights and all the mythology that has come from that. So I like that she referenced Selene and Venus as that kind of mythical love of mysterious light that comes naturally. So I don't know. I really think that this was beautiful in what it says, but also in its style. It says that it's a Petrarchan sonnet. And it shows the rhyme scheme there of A, B, B, A, B, B, A, C, D, C, D, C, D, C, D, E, C, D, E, which is, you know, a challenge to do. It's one thing to be able to keep a rhyme scheme, but then to make it still flow and feel like great word choices while being in the rhyme scheme can be very challenging. And I think that she mastered that. She made it a great story within the structure.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the rhyme because I thought it was great too. And I didn't know the word was pronounced revered. I always pronounced it revered. But I'm going to take the advice of a librarian.
You know what?
I seem to learn stuff every day.
I think you're right, because I learn book stuff, but the thing is I learn it in writing. So saying things out loud, I can't take credit for. I think you're probably right.
All right. You know, my son did that. It was so funny. My son was a huge reader when he was a young kid. When he still kind of is now, but he used to walk up all the time and say words, and my wife and I would look at him like, "Do you mean this?" Because he would read it. It's the first time he ever saw the word. He would read it as opposed to hearing it like that. So, all right, interesting. Anyway, I'll try not to get overly distracted on the first poem. We should probably move on.
The next poem is by Emily Wonder, and Pam, would you read that for us?
Absolutely. I would be, make sure, yep, I am unmuted. All right. I would be happy to. All right. And The Last Date by Emily Wonder, and it goes like this. We went to the old coffee shop, the one with the wooden door, the one that was painted burgundy. The ancient bell clanged against the door as we entered, and the scent of coffee beans held us in the doorway until the barista greeted us. Afflicted eyes followed our woven hands to the counter, and I pretended not to notice. After we ordered, we sat outside with the false belief that daggers could not pierce windows. The skin of her left cheek glowed as her silky hair reflected the sunset, and I sat in awe of her glistening eyes. The waiter's shadow interrupted my admiration, drinks in hand. She faked a smile for the waiter, though I doubted if I knew what her real one would look like. We sipped our drinks in the brief pauses of our long conversation. We talked about everything, work, school, our favorite TV shows, but we never talked about us. I used her apathy as an excuse to believe that she cared. We talked into the night without noticing the bird's silence until she said she had to be home by 9. I walked her to her car and made a half attempt at kissing her, thinking she would put in the other half. After an awkward goodbye, her car drove away. I stood in the now empty parking lot, half lit with streetlights. I looked up at the moon. For the first time in my young life, I felt the pain of loving someone who would never love me back. End poem.
Awesome read. I could see you getting into that story. And this is a great poem. I gave this from the bronze on the contest that I had. And I thought it was really interesting. I always enjoy when people take prompts different places. I mean, if I was looking at the picture, I would have taken it in total scientific way. That's the way I would have taken it. And just that Emily, you know, took it as a story and as a feeling of this story. I don't know if this is a real story or not. I don't know if it's based on you know, something that really happened, but just that kind of feeling. You can feel this person, you know, coming out of there and looking up at the picture that I took and seeing that moon and having that expression, and that this whole story that came out of that, I just thought was really, really amazing. It's really interesting, and she put it in the notes. It's tagged as you know, love and teen, but also LGBTQ. So wondering if there's a little bit of you know, that in there, where it's you know, somebody who likes somebody of the same sex or whatever, and that's why it's never really going to happen, which you know must be interesting. You know, I've certainly, as a man, I mean, not for decades, but you know, before I was with my wife, I've you know, liked people who didn't like girls who didn't like me, and it must be, you know, interesting, sad, awkward for you know, anybody who's you know, lesbian, gay, bi, you know, transsexual, any of those things. It must be also a different kind of awkwardness. But what a beautiful story that Emily wrote, and it was just very emotional. I could feel that in Pam's reading. So great reading, Pam. Afasiana, I bet you you're brewing with some ideas to talk about here.
I loved all the little details. Like, it really made me feel like this was real. And whether it is or not, it was some great storytelling. The sounds of the bell, the smells of the coffee beans, all of your senses are engaged in this story. I really liked afflicted eyes followed our woven hands. Woven hands is a really nice way of describing that. And I really liked the line, we sat outside with the false belief that daggers could not pierce windows. And it, after talking about the eyes, so, you know, the daggers of the eyes. And that made me think that that maybe the barista or whoever was in the coffee shop was looking at them with disapproval, and that could be because the person was not approving of them being lesbians, as they held hands and someone was looking at them funny. But it could also be, because this sounds like it's a breakup, that maybe the eyes that are uncomfortable are the partners as well, knowing that things are not going well. I like the description. It has like the details of the skin and the hair, and recognizing that fake smile. Just you can tell there's a closeness because there's those details that are noticed. And I liked the half attempt at kissing her, thinking she would put in the other half. And in a way, that's sort of a test. It's like, see if it's reciprocated. And then it wasn't. And that makes an awkward goodbye. I like that she went here with this prompt, because looking at the sky and looking at a street can spark a memory or a story imagining what could happen. And I just love that response to the picture. I thought this was very well done.
I agree. I've said this multiple times on shows, but I think almost everybody on this site should write stories, you know, even just novels. I mean, I've said it before. I read your novel Faziana. It was great. And just, can you imagine a whole novel? Like I wouldn't be able to put the book down, you know, just the talent and the descriptions that people have. I think that you know, there's a lot of novelization talent on here. And Pee Wee, by the way, says that it is revered. I thought it was just because I literally live next to Revere, Massachusetts, so maybe I was being prejudiced, but yeah, comment on that. So
it could also be an accent thing. I'm going to blame my accent.
Oh, there you go. It's the accent on my end too. But the woman with perfect diction and no discernible accent, Pam Ray. Let's see what she has to say here.
Well, geez, my Wisconsin accent.
And
all right.
Anything's better than a Boston accent, let me tell you.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, let's see here. This is just beautiful. You know, it's really easy to get into reading a write that is, you feel like it's written from the heart. Like, whether this is true or it's made up, it feels like a truth. It feels like a painful awareness of an experience. I, too, really like the attention to detail, how she brings in the reactions of the barista and the waiter and the false smiling. I used her apathy as an excuse to believe that she cared. You know, because if somebody's not getting directly angry, you know, if they haven't spoken up and said, I don't like this, or I don't like where our relationship is going, and it's simply an apathy. You can fill in the blanks, and you oftentimes fill in the blanks with what you want to be there. And I really like that she looked at the parking lot in the picture and how there's cars in there, but there's no people, and there's a sense of loneliness. And she really picked up on that sense of loneliness. So just wonderful imagery all the way through and beautifully written. Very well done.
Great insight, Pam. Thank you. And we are moving on with life with Faziana as our guide.
All right, Dan, I'm going to get you to read Parking at Airport.
I can try as best I can. This is by Pindiprol, Parking at Airport. The place seems like a parking lot at the airport meant for passengers for visits. The cars parked orderly. There is a lot of space for others to park. Full moonlight removes dustness, make the vision clear at night. The lights at the parking are so bright, which adds to the beauty of the sight. The Venus planet near the moon appears like a lovely lone star in the sky. Being present in such a lovely place makes one amazed of the brightness around, makes one feel their life should also be so bright, to have a worthy living all their life. End poem. And, you know, I've after I read this, the first time I read his poems, and And it was surprising to me because I was reading it and it was like extremely descriptive. And then again, it reminds me of novelizations almost, where kind of describing what's going on there. And then here's the feeling I get out of it. And I just thought it was beautifully done as a brevity. And it's kind of how I felt when I see these things, or when I took that picture, that, you know, I'm in a store parking lot that, you know, doesn't mean anything, right? It's just a random food store, but being able to see the moon and Venus there makes it, you know, a beautiful, lovely place just because of that. And that, you know, is how I feel a lot of times when I see those things. One can amaze at that brightness around, make one feel their life should be also so bright, you know, just... I forget the whole song, but it's a Dave Matthews song. I think it's Dancing Nancy's, where he says this, but he's just talking about life, and then he says, and then I look up at the sky, my mouth is open wide, and he's just saying, you know, it's all you have to do is really look up, and your worries should all go away, because you just kind of realize the universe that we're in. So I thought he did a nice little brevity on that. Afasiana, let's go to you.
I agree. I like that it starts off as description and then goes into how it makes you feel. I think that's a really wonderful way of looking at things. I was talking to an author, I think it was Kenneth Opal. There was a few authors that I was talking to around the same time. I think it was Kenneth Opal. And he said that everywhere he goes, he takes a little notebook, and if he sees something, he sketches it or he takes a picture, and then he writes what he sees in detail, and then he writes what thoughts come out of that, and then he writes what feelings come out of that. And it's like eventually he'll flip through that notebook when he needs inspiration and put those bits into stories. But I really liked that structure of like, what is there? What does it make me think? What does it make me feel? And this kind of follows that structure. What is there? What do we notice about it? And how does that make us feel? So I feel like he has the making of an author, like you said. It definitely expands this. I loved the way it expanded at the end, where makes one feel their life should also be so bright to have a worthy living all their life. It becomes philosophical, and that's a great way to go, I feel, looking at a picture and thinking about how we can be inspired by what's in the picture. Really, really cool response.
Yeah, I agree. And I will say that you, speaking of inspiration, I'm just going to throw a side note here, you actually inspired me, I think it might have been the last show when you were talking about meeting all kinds of authors. I looked around and I'm going to go to Rhode Island AuthorCon. In Rhode Island, they actually have an authors convention, a local Rhode Island one, and I'm going to go down there at the first one I'm going to go to. We have a lot of cons around here in New England. There's one like every weekend for something. So Rhode Island Author Con, I'm going to go check that out. Anyway,
I'm
Pam,
jealous.
Good. Yeah, I'm hoping there's a Massachusetts one too, but Rhode Island is got a lot of good conventions. Pam. Let's get into your mind. I'm always excited to do that.
All right. Well, I like this poem because it's very observational. I like that he brings us into his thoughts. Even at the opening line, the place seems like a parking lot at the airport meant for passengers for visits. The cars parked orderly. There's a lot of space for others to park. Very observational in its tone. Bringing us into the imagery. And when he wraps it up with the end, makes one feel their life should also be so bright to have a worthy living all their life. Wonderful philosophical thought there. And then the line, being present in such a lovely place. That line there I thought was a particularly strong one because it spoke of the importance of being and living in the moment and being aware of your surroundings. So excellent write and very well done.
Excellent, excellent. So let's get inspired some more, Afasiana. What do you want us to inspire by next?
All right. So this next poem is by Anne Stephen. It's called A City at Night. A city at night holds a fascinating charm, like a fairy from a magical world. The black sky, dotted with big and small lights, look like a black carpet embroidered with silver thread. The twinkling stars, winking mischievously, seem to hold some secret for us mortals down below. He invites me for a late-night coffee and a drive through the city at midnight. As we park alongside other nocturnal wayfarers, I drink in the beauty of the urban city, spread out in a panorama of light and darkness. I am overcome with a strange ecstasy. Love blooms at night. End poem.
Awesome read, and this actually got the gold in my contest. I just really felt, and I think I might have been right, because she wrote back and said that this really came from her heart for sure, and I could just really feel that. I want to read the whole thing again, because it's the whole thing to me is a quote in its own. I just like the idea of where everything was going for her. And, you know, the twinkling stars winking mischievously hold some secret, and then, then to kind of go into the, he invites me for late night coffee, drive through the city at midnight, we park alongside the nocturnal wayfarers, I drink in the beauty of the urban city. You can just kind of feel the love affair. And what I liked about it also, too, is, I mentioned before how we kind of lose, you know, in the city, we lose the night sky, but it is still there. And to have that middle ground and that marriage of that, and to be able to be in tune, because there's beauty in city. There is. I love the cities just like I like the country, and I like being in cities. I think there's a beauty to it. There's a good feel to it. But then to be able to have the purity of both together and feel that. I thought Anne really brought that together nicely. So I enjoyed this one a lot. Pam, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, this one was definitely a well-deserved gold. Wonderful imagery and metaphors. I love the way she draws us in and keeps our attention all the way through. There's such a romantic feel to this. Not only the fact that she seems to be on a date, you know, but the fact that she shows us the beauty of the light and the dark in the city, the black sky dotted with big and small lights looks like a black carpet embroidered with silver thread. I drink in the beauty of the urban city spread out in a panorama of light and darkness. I thought that the fact that she shows us this interweaving of light and darkness that exists within the city really worked well. It's just beautifully written and very well done.
Yeah, that's some great, great insight. Excellent. And, yeah, thanks, Anne Stephan, for that poem. And Faziana, you read it lovely.
I really loved how it went from the magical feeling of, like, it's like a fairy from a magical world, which – I mean, it can be. Nature connects you to that sense of magic. And then the part that Pam had pointed out, the black carpet embroidered with silver thread, that is such a beautiful way to describe it. And it kind of makes me want to embroider on black and, like, make a starry scene. Not that I'm skilled in that way, but it's just it's a thought of how nature can be expressed. And then the winking mischievously was one part that I had a lot of fun with. I love the word mischievously, so really if anyone puts that in anything, I love it. But the context of the stars being mischievous is really fun. And then going on to the specifics of her experience being on this date, and I like the term nocturnal wayfarers, that kind of late night going parking excitement of a date. This is really fun, and I can see why it received gold. Well done.
Excellent. Thank you. And, yeah, I'm going to make sure I use mischievously in the next poem that I write for you then. And also, I'm gonna publicize my errors. Thanks for calling me out. Faziana texted me privately and said I can hear you typing, and I'm horrible at that. So I apologize if anyone was listening to me type. I have like 5 mute buttons around here, so I have absolutely no excuse for not muting myself. So I apologize for anybody that heard that. It looks like you posted another one. So who's gonna read
Pam's
that one?
Pam, right.
All right, let's see here. Mooning Over Memories by Sandy G. In the twilight of lucent memory, reflections age mellow and kind, easing me with a gentle remedy. The moon and Venus of our youth again align in skies of ink and satin, fueling passion under boughs of willow. Flecked by rays of chalky moonlight, tender kisses add magic to your spell. Unspoken fires burn away objection. Deep enchantment flowers bud to blossom, lighting fire to my warmest recollection of Venus rising beside a chalky moon. End poem.
Excellent, Pam. Thank you very much. And I'm going to start with you, Faziana.
I think that this is really beautiful, the way it's described. Again, it has kind of that artistic look, like we had talked about the embroidery thing, and this has ink and satin. So again, it's referencing it like a tactile piece of art, like we can feel the beauty of the sky. I like that, again, has kind of the touch of the mythology too. I mean, it's talking about Venus, which is the name of the planet, but also having Venus rising just also makes me think of like, maybe it's not meant to be mythical, but I get a mythical feeling of it. And it has that nostalgia, the moon and the Venus of our youth again align. So it's seeing them in the same way as you did when you were young at certain points in the sky. It references something, and it makes connections. I've seen where you can actually, like, you buy star charts of important days. So you can look at, like, the day your child was born or the day you got married or something like that, and they will print the stars from the point of view of wherever you were at that time. And that's kind of an exciting thing to be able to look back on. It's like now it's that time of year, or it's the every few years when the stars are just aligned so like they were at that time, and it's you get to connect with that. Is it Halley's Comet that comes around a certain amount of times? I remember when I was young, it came around. And then 70, okay, well, I'm not 75 years old, so it can't be Halley's that I'm thinking of, because I've seen it twice. it's a different one. But something like that, though, where it comes back and a certain amount of time, you can, if you experience it multiple times, and it's like that excitement all over again. I don't know what I'm thinking of, but it can't have been 75 years. I remember it when I was about 6, but I remember it when I was 30.
That's dancing beneath the moon there in Canada. That's what it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it happens, especially around here. BC, we got a lot of moon dancers. Haven't quite done it myself, but, you know, I wouldn't put it past me. So, there is one group who does it naked. I don't think I'm going to join that part, but
there's a group somewhere that does it. That does everything naked. Pick a thing, and there's some group that does it naked somewhere, right?
So, oh, that's true enough. Yeah.
I think it might be the Hale-Bopp comet. Was that the one you were thinking of?
It could be.
Okay.
If it was, if it was 5 years ago and then about 20 years before that, then yes.
It might have been, but as usual. Pee-wee's saying it's the cicadas. No, not the cicadas, but yes, they do come every whatever years. Not that. Yeah, cool. Thanks. So if first time I'm sorry, were you all set? I don't want to step over your
comments. Go ahead. Go ahead.
When I first saw this one, I was confused because I was looking for cows because I read it as mooing over memories. I was like, well, I think then I read it correctly, and I said, all right, mooning over memories. But I think the same that was a joke. You guys can laugh if you want. But that was sorry. We have to explain jokes. It's always fun, right? But I too took the same thing, and I loved how this was written, and I think about these things sometimes when I look at the moon, I look at sunsets, and I think of, you know, I saw this when I was younger. I saw clouds like this. I saw birds. I've been looking at this for, you know, over 50 years, this type of a thing. And then I think even further, I think that moon that I'm looking at was looked at by people 10,000 years ago. If you believe people around then, it is interesting. So I took it kind of almost more as not necessarily the same group was coming, but that they've been looking at this forever, so it's something from their youth. And yeah, this is very heartfelt and beautiful on reflection. And yeah, Pam, I knew Pam would like mooing over memories. She likes cows a lot, so not sure you like that. But yeah, this is very, very beautifully done. And Pam, besides commenting on cows, what do you think about this one?
This is beautifully written. It is heartfelt. It brings to my mind the thought of memories of love and not of a love that currently exists. In the twilight of lucid memory, reflections age mellow and kind, easing me with a gentle remedy. I feel like, and maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm being a little too of a pessimist, but I feel like to me those lines speak on the idea of how we tend to, as we get further away from when something happened, we tend to make it better than it actually was. We tend to make it gentler, more romantic. I also, you know, really like the imagery of a chalky moon. Flecked by rays of chalky moonlight, tender kisses add magic to your spell. Unspoken fires burn away objection. Those are really romantic lines there, and it really brings us into that moment. So just beautifully written and very well done.
There is a lot of romance in this, absolutely. All right, cool. And how can we get more romantic than Ephesiana talking to us? So Ephesiana, tell us what we're doing. Trying to segue everything here tonight. I guess see how I can do that.
Right. I need to correct myself because I said Kenneth Opal had that concept, and it was actually Jonathan Oxier who I was talking to, earlier when I was referencing the little notebook he carries around. That was Jonathan Oxier. So, my bad. anyway, our next poem is by Pee-wee Cushion, and Dan, would you read that for us, please?
I would love to read Pee-wee's poem. Let me get it here. Hold on. I am way behind in life. One moment here, please. All right, Pee-wee, I get you covered. Excuse me. This is called On Infinity. Intrinsically obvious to oblivion itself. Dreaming dreams of an infinity on a shelf. Limes that curve around and curve again. They keep on curving without any end. Perpetual motion in a simple arc, yet trying to define it, trouble starts. Quite mind-boggling, some may say. If you think too hard, it'll break your brain. A concept unending, without measure. A mind can't grasp that, no matter how clever. It isn't just a big bang, all from none. It isn't just the moon or the passing sun. Keeps going on forever and ever and ever. But is it a matter of time? Or of distance a measure. Time itself is a measure of distance. Can you measure a concept with no resistance? Everyone seems to claim they understand, but the concept itself we cannot comprehend. End poem. Awesome job, Pee-wee. Pee-wee always has a great flow to his work, and I enjoyed this and I enjoyed the theme of it, and it's something I've been, you know, I write a lot of scientific and philosophical type thoughts. It's just what comes in my head all the time, and I'm convinced that as smart as we can be and as much we can figure out, we really don't. There's so much more we can't understand. You know, I don't think that we really understand as much as we think we do. You know, we geeked out before on scientific, I think last time, and I was talking about Carl Sagan, and Carl Sagan is one of the smartest guys ever. I think Isaac Asimov actually was quoted him saying he wished he knew half as much about the universe as Carl Sagan did, and Carl actually wrote books denouncing religion. Like, he thought it was bad for everybody, denouncing it. And at the end of his life, he was questioning it. He was actually kind of talking about God and the concepts, as opposed to denouncing that religion was just falsehoods. He actually started questioning it when he got sick and started thinking about it. So, you know, as much as we think we might know everything right now, we really kind of don't. And you know, there are a lot of people smarter than me, many, many more people smarter than me, and a lot of people that do understand things, but I just don't think as a universe, as a whole, as God, as whatever you think of God is, I just don't think we are smart enough to really understand the nature of the universe and the nature of God and how big everything is and how everything works together. I just don't know if we're advanced enough and smart enough to really do it. Can we understand little things? Can we get concepts? Can we kind of get basics understandings? Yes. But I just don't know if we're evolved enough to have that type of intelligence, you know, and I think, you know, Pee-wee captures that here, which I thought is really great. You know, can you understand everything? Can you really understand infinity and grasp these concepts? I don't know if we can. So, excellent, Pee-wee. Excellent job. Pam, let's go with you. Yeah, Phasia says, every day is a nerd fest in my life. Yeah, me too. I agree. let's go with that. Go ahead, Pam. What do you think?
Yeah, well, first of all, this has great rhyme and flow, wonderfully metered, great imagery. I really like how he writes about the idea of how difficult it is to truly grasp and comprehend the idea of the infinity, the vastness of space and time, and the idea of that infinite loop, and how we desperately try to do so, how we desperately try to measure it and fit it into, you know, our little box. I really like perpetual motion in a simple arc, yet trying to define it, trouble starts. Quite mind-boggling, some may say, if you think too hard, it'll break a brain. A concept unending without measure, a mind can't grasp that no matter how clever. Because it takes more than, you know, like you said, it's about how there are some things that no matter what we're intelligent about, are too great for us to grasp at this moment in our history. So excellent write and very well done.
You're very right, Pam. You know, we do try to fit, right? We try to get that world and make it so it fits into the way we want to understand things. And, you know, I've accepted a long time ago that I just don't know everything. And if I don't know stuff, I just openly admit it. And because that's the way it is, and it's probably all the way it's going to be. But excellent insight. Thank you, Pam. Aphasiana, continue the nerd fest here. Give me your comments.
I was responding to him saying that was from my nerd fest, and I was like, it's always.
Oh, okay.
I thought this reminded me of what Aristotle said. I think it was Aristotle. The more you know, the more you know you don't know. So it's like by being aware of how vast space is, it makes you realize there's so much out there that you don't know, because we couldn't possibly quantify how much is out there, and you couldn't get to the far reaches of the universe to see the whole thing. It's beyond us. No matter our technology, we'd never get to explore everything as one person. So to know about things makes you realize how many things you don't know. And I think Pee-wee captured that. So he may be an Aristotle buff, I don't know, or just on the same wavelength as him.
There you go. Yeah, you're true. Nobody can know it all unless you're Zaphoid Beeblebrox, and that's my ultra nerd comment there, if anybody knows that reference. But does anybody know that reference? No one's commenting, so I'm guessing not. So what are we doing now? It's from the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, I should know that. Okay. I'm slacking or something. I do know that. I'm a little slow today. My computer was insanely slow at work. It took 45 minutes to log in, which was super embarrassing because I'm like, I have like a lineup of people in front of me and I need the computer to do stuff. And I'm like trying to do it without the computer. And this one lady was like screaming at me like, I just want you to print this. And I'm like, I'd love to, but no. See how it's frozen on the screen here? Yeah, I feel like the computer now. My brain is just like doing that little circle that means like loading, loading.
Yes.
I really liked the way that he wrote this. The lines that curve around and curve again, like there's this circular kind of thing. And I like that he says a simple arc, yet trying to define it, trouble starts, because what seems so simple is actually really complicated. And just, yeah, Pee-wee, you're awesome. I love it. So that was the last one for your contest, Dan, the one that we had carried over. And now we are on to my contest of the week, which I called Self-Made. And it's actually because my husband sent me this piece of art, like just a picture of the sculpture. He's on a diet and has been like working out, and he's been losing a lot of weight. And so the picture that he sent me was the one where there's a man who's in good shape, kind of chiseling himself out of a fat lower body. And it's like about, you know, working hard for that. So from what I saw doing like a reverse image search, the one that he sent me was by Victor Hugo Yanez Pina. And I posted that one. And then I posted one, it's a picture of a man with a big hammer who is carving himself out of the stone. And I believe that was by Bobby Carlyle, although there were a lot of versions of that by different people. So I think maybe it was a concept that a whole bunch of people did, and they're all slightly different. And I'm sorry, I don't know which one was the original. The one I found was by Bobby Carlyle. And then there's another one called Self-Made Woman by Paul Slipper. And that one is a woman who's, you know, making herself with a hammer and chisel, I guess. It's kind of like about being an independent woman. So my contest is, we are born with some qualities and others we learn from our environment. Are there aspects of yourself that you feel you carved out yourself? And then these sculptures are just meant to be motivation. So the poems that we're going to read now are ones that were inspired by that contest. We're going to start with one by Opti. Okay, and is it Pam's turn to read? I think maybe. Pam, are you up for a read?
I like it when Pam reads, so yeah, let's do it.
Sure, I can do that, especially since it's such a shorty. All right, Born to Be by Opti. Indeed, I was the first to be me. I carved myself from granite, I engaged in conspiracy. I played, I prayed, and I became me. I was born, that's history, the truth, maybe, something no one else can see. I play this game in this environment, born to be free. I don't pay rent. End poem.
Great read. And yeah, your contest was very interesting, as always, with Faziana, and it brings to mind the concept of free will, right? There's all the different extremist theories. Of one of them is free will. Is everything free will? Are we just deciding all our fates, or literally is everything fate? Are the atoms in our body that even make our decisions like destined to just be there? Like a really good mathematician could go back to the Big Bang and watch the atoms and figure out that we're going to be having the show tonight. Is that the way it is, or is it something in between? And that's kind of what, a lot of your contest, I think, was about, which is great. And indeed, I was the first to be me. A lot of times I can pick out little poems within poems, and I thought that could be a one-line poem right there. I carved myself from granite, and I became me. And we are the first and only ones to be us, right? There'll never be another, Pam Ray. There never was, there never will again. We are unique beings in history. And I do believe that it's a combination of things, but mostly free will, that we do actually have, we are conscious and can make decisions based on whatever. But I thought this is a great brevity and beautifully stated towards free will and the individualism of every person that will and has ever lived. So awesome job. Faziana, what did you think of the first one we're going to read in your contest?
It kind of reminded me of the Dr. Seuss quote, "Today you are you, that's truer than true. There is no one alive who is youer than you." That first line of "Indeed, I was the first to be me," that just jumped me right into the Dr. Seuss thing. Now remember, I am a children's librarian, so that's pretty much where my brain goes in general. But that's what struck me with the first line, and then I like that it's referred to as a game. I play this game in this environment, life as a game, and there's work in it, but we play the game of life, and we see what happens. With the board game Life, I used to cheat all the time. If I didn't like the way my life turned out, I would just restart. I'd be like, oh, and we're going to just jump the car over here and take the other path.
So wait a second. So you used to cheat at the game of life?
Yes.
We'll have to psychoanalyze that at some point, I think.
Right? I know. It's definitely, symbolic. But, I was determined that I was going to go to college and have kids and have I wanted to have it all. And you can't, really. In the game, you kind of, you have to pick what your priorities are, much like real life. You have to pick your priorities. And I refused to only succeed in one aspect. I had a problem.
Yeah, excellent. I'm going to exactly. Overachiever in board games. I gotcha. I said this in the last show with Bobby, but as you mentioned, Dr. Seuss, I had a revelation again that I live in Massachusetts, in Springfield, Massachusetts, the home of Dr. Seuss, where he was born. His very first book, correct me if I'm wrong, Librarian, is To Think I Saw It on Mulberry Street. So I actually went to Mulberry Street in Springfield, Massachusetts, and I was like, oh my goodness, I'm standing in a Dr. Seuss book. If you Google map it and go down the street view, one section of it where he actually grew up around there, all the houses look like they're Dr. Seuss, like they're something drawn out of Dr. Seuss. So literally that's where he got his inspiration from. I just thought I'd throw that little thing out there for the librarian, our librarian and book nerd friends out there.
But was it like that in his time, or did they make it like that because of him?
No, that was the houses, I believe, were back when he was writing this. He's not, you know, he's not hundreds of years old, right? He's not that old, but it's, I believe it's the older section of that road. And I'm like, it's just, they're not bizarre looking houses. They're not exactly like that, but they're just a little strange. Like, they're just a little bit weird, enough to, it seems like you're in it. And it's also, the houses are all across the street from a cemetery. I don't know if that had anything to do with this kind of, you know, weirdness, but it's crazy. Anyway, nothing to
I
do with
that.
The poem. I was just doing another little nerd fest out there.
Hey, if a poem gets you, like, off on tangents, it's a good poem. It sparked something in you.
Absolutely. And for more segues, speaking of sparks that light everyone's fire, Pam Ray is about to comment.
Yes, absolutely. This is a wonderful brevity that speaks to me on the idea of shaping yourself by learning to think for yourself. I really like that I carved myself from granite. I engaged in conspiracy. I played, I prayed, and I became me. And that end line, I don't pay rent. You know, I'm not going to belong to anybody else. I'm going to belong to myself. So, excellent write and very well done.
Excellent, Pam. Thank you. Pee-wee said someone
we
said
have,
on the poll my... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
We have a new caller. Area code 208. Who do we have?
Hi, it's Mika.
Hi, Mika.
Hey, hey, Mika.
Hey, Mika.
Hi.
Good
hey,
to
Mika.
Have you here. Great.
Good to be here.
Absolutely.
Did you get to hear the poem by Opti?
I didn't. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
No problem at all. I just wanted to comment. Pee-wee said that one of his poems, somebody said once that it sounded like a combination of Dr. Seuss and Hunter S. Thompson. So I said, you need to tell us which one. So he's going to come back and tell us that one later, because that certainly sounds like an interesting combination. But as all life does, it moves on, and we're going to move on, I think, aren't we, Faziana?
Yes, and I think we're going to get Mika to read her poem for us.
We are. That's your punishment for coming in late. You got to read the next poem.
No, so cruel and unusual. Don't do it.
Yes. Excellent.
Thank you, guys. This is called Reinventing the Wheel. Progress within a revolving door. Circle back to the mirror. My father's face in it, or mine, but with his mistakes, like our own personal disease, oozing from the cracks in me. I remind the petri face, your sadness is cyclical. But are such sentient seeds spat out in my sink just deceit? Is this not the circling as of a drain? Hasn't every wheel eventually ceased to turn? Like the nightmares in which I thought I was already awake, I have evolved again only into the same old self. End poem.
Excellent. Thanks for a great read. And this is really interesting. I thought this was a unique take. I mean, the obvious take on the on your contest of Faziana is changing oneself, right? Like carving yourself out to be the person you want to be, changing things around. And, you know, like the nightmare in which I thought I was already awake, I evolved again into the same old self. You know, trying to change yourself around, you're still the same person. And it can make you think about that, you know, the body that you are. Now, I've never been greatly overweight, but I'm 30 pounds heavier than I should be right now. I'll admit that on public airwaves. And I've lost the weight, and I've got it back again, and I wish it could be better. I'm still me, right? I mean, I am the body that I'm in, right? But I'm still my person. So you can carve your body. You can make yourself beautiful. You can do whatever you want to make the outside look good, but you're still going to be the same basic person. But I thought this is very 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 reflective inside and a really nice unique take on the prompt. Especially the title "Reinventing the Wheel," I thought was very interesting as well too. Faziana.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Your turn. Yeah, absolutely.
I think this is a really interesting poem, and, you know, it hits us in an emotional way. I really like the second stanza where you're looking in the mirror, my father's face, or mine, but with his mistakes. So it's like your father has left his mark in you, like our personal disease oozing from the cracks in me, like the stresses of what he put you through coming out as any of your wrinkles or what you see as imperfections, and maybe within your eyes seeing his impact on you or seeing your resemblance to him in a way that is disturbing. I think that's a really fascinating and well done stanza that makes you imagine what it's like to look at the mirror and then see him. I could picture this as like an art piece where it could have visual art along with it. And the circling of the drain is one of those things that creates a mental image as well. Hasn't every wheel eventually ceased to turn? That's again, a scientific thing that ends up having an emotional response, which seems to be a pattern in a lot of our poems tonight, where it's talking about the concept, and then it also is talking about kind of the emotional ramifications and how it can work metaphorically. This is definitely a different take on the prompt, but I love it.
Thank you so much, Faith.
Cool, absolutely.
Thank you for sharing.
Pam made me very sad because she left, but then she made me happy and came back. So, Pam, did you get to read or listen to the poem?
Am I unmuted?
You are now, yes.
Okay, good. Sorry, I didn't hear them. You know what? I apologize. My son called, and it's such a weird day and time for him to call. I went into a mother panic mode. But then it turned out he was only calling to ask if I wanted to go shopping for Thanksgiving food on Sunday. So I could have waited.
No urgency there.
Yeah.
All right, kids get priority.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I had read this one earlier, and then I read through it while you guys were commenting, and I think it's brilliant. It's got amazing imagery and metaphors. It's an extremely emotive write. You know, how we see not only our parents in ourselves, but their choices and their patterns. And it speaks also on the idea of how our history affects us, and we see that history, and we think that we can't break away from it. I did really like the imagery and the question, is this not the circling as of a drain? Hasn't every wheel eventually ceased to turn? You know, it's that idea that maybe, just maybe, that this pattern will eventually stop. So powerful, right, and very well done.
Thank you so much, you guys.
Absolutely.
Those are all awesome comments.
Yeah, of course. Anything you want to say about your poem?
No, I think you guys really just were spot on about it. I guess the only thing I would say is I relate to you when you're talking, Daniel, about like having the same struggle, losing it and then gaining it and losing it and gaining it. And that's kind of, you know, where I was at writing this poem too, and with your guys' prompt, is like it's not a battle that ever ends. And like Pam was saying, eventually maybe there is an end in sight, but it just doesn't feel like that. When you continually return to the same struggle again and again.
Yeah, excellent point. Awesome, well, great poem, and thank you for sharing and reading. And Faziana is going to get us to go back and forth again and again and again, like she always does. Poem, comment, poem, comment. We're on to poem now. So what do we got next?
So this is one by Felon, and it's called Nothing Up the Sleeve. The old saying, I'd rather be good than lucky, has the best odds in winning. The lucky number 7 left me empty-handed and spinning. Losing all in roulette, even with both red and black chipped bet. The gambler in me risk what's been earned and remains a debt. April birthed a little girl. Life had stacked nothing but emotional turmoil. Success unfurled, courage once shelled, now discovering bones of pearl. End poem.
Really, really interesting prompt. And, yeah, I've been playing the lottery for many, many years now, and I've never won. So I'd rather be good than lucky. I wish I could have all those dollars back that I spent on those lottery tickets. I actually went, when I was a younger kid in my early 20s, I actually won $400, which in Massachusetts was the minimum to win without having to go to the lottery to cash it in. So I cashed it in, I bought a couple more, I won $400 again. I did that 6 times in one day. Like, oh my God, I'm not making this up. I was like, oh my God. And I kept, the lady's like, wow, you're really lucky. That was got to be 30 something years ago. And I don't know if I've even won a dollar since. So they sucked me in. I think it's an evil conspiracy theory that they did that, 'cause they've gotten more than $1,200 from me since then. But I would rather be good than lucky as well too. Lucky is just not in your hands and waiting for, you know, something to happen to you instead of actually taking power into your hands. And I think that covered this picture really beautifully, which is a woman, a very strong, powerful looking woman, basically, you know, carving something into herself, just making her own life. Right. And that's what, you know, the metaphor of carving your own statue means. You make your own life, you make your own way in life. And I think, you know, nice little Beverly covered that great, as always, Felon. You're a great, great poet. Mika, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I really like this, and I thought that was a really good comment as well. I was thinking, it's really interesting, the gambling, as a metaphor, When you pair the gambler in me, risk what's been earned and remains a debt, with success unfurled, courage once shelled, now discovering bones of pearl, I really like the way that it's like you have something inside of you, but if you're constantly expending it on these, you know, schemes to get ahead, you almost don't take the time to look inward and really take stock of what you have. And that's what I read in the end, is instead of risking what's been earned, actually looking within and discovering the bones of you, and in this case, something precious, the bones of pearl. So I thought that was really powerful.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. If you do look inside, you are going to find something precious. Everybody has that. Pam, what's going on with you?
Well, I just think this is absolutely wonderful. Great imagery and metaphors. I like it. It has a definite Felon attitude and vibe to it. And I like how it speaks on the idea of becoming strong and becoming good through your own choices, you know. And I like how she gets personal with the lines, April birthed a little girl, life had stacked nothing but emotional turmoil. Success unfurled, courage once shelled, now discovering bones of pearl. The idea of discovering your own inner strength and your own inner beauty. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And continuing my segue, speaking of inner beauty, who do we got up next to comment?
Well, I didn't get to comment on Felon, so I'm going to do that first.
So that will be you.
I love Felon. We're AP friends, so I'm biased here. But I think knowing her, that last line is really powerful, because I know she used to be quite, you know, I was going to say hardened, like she had that protective shell around her, and that's coming down a little bit. And so now beyond that shell, she's realizing that there are pearls within herself, that it's okay to show off that inner beauty. I think that is something that she's really gotten great at, and knowing that, you know, whether you bet on one thing or another, that, you know, as a gambler, there's always a risk. And in life, you know, backing up certain things and just hoping for the best doesn't always go great. And she had to work hard to become who she is, and she's had to go through a lot, and she just keeps coming out better and better. So I think this is a really strong poem, and knowing her personal backstories, I think it hits me even harder.
Excellent, Faze. So what amazing place are we going to go to now?
Now, I'm going to put yours up, Daniel.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So, yes, I this made me laugh, but I don't know if I have a strange sense of humor, but I named this an Apple II Plus with a Windows 10 installed. And this is basically just on the general theme, not really any of the specific pictures. I am destined to be a memory, if lucky. It is really all I am now. Collection of keystrokes, direction books in a forgotten basement library room. I don't really need them anymore. Everything just works. I like to think that I'm good. I like to think that I can love. I've been told so many times what those things are. I mean, everybody knows what good is, right? And love? I believe I am in it, as a dancer is in a ballet. But it's not like the movies. It's not like the fairy tales. It ebbs and flows as a sailboat at the mercy of the wind. Every sense, during every second, during every minute, during every day, memory upon memory upon memory. Each single note in a symphony, oh, what that they can create. Each single letter in a boardroom presentation, oh, what can they destroy. Each single speck of dirt on the mountain which I now stand, higher and higher each day, to see more and more. And the landscape is there, whether I want it or not. If I was truly good, I would hope not to be that memory of immortality to help set my loved ones free. End poem. And thank you, Faziana, for letting me put one on tonight. It's always fun to read. I'm going to start with Pam.
Yeah, I really like this one. First of all, what a wonderfully clever title. I really think these are relatable lines. I like to think that I'm good. I like to think that I can love. I've been told so many times that what those things are. I mean, everybody knows what good is, right? And I like that you put that in a question. You know, the idea of the philosophy of what exactly is good. And each single note in a symphony, oh, what can they create? Each single letter in a boardroom presentation, oh, what can they destroy? The idea of the words we use can either build up or destroy not only other people, but our own character. And I like that this speaks on the idea of wanting to be there to help others. Just wonderfully written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I really appreciate it. Yeah, I often think of us as the memories and the input that we get all the time, almost like a computer program. But sometimes just so damn confused. That's why I was thinking an Apple II Plus with Windows 10 installed. Just, you know, I can't figure out all these things that have been put into my mind. So that's where that title came from. Mika, I would be honored to get your thoughts on this.
Oh, this is really cool. I like that kind of philosophical base that you are stating in it of just being basically the cumulative memories of each moment, and how you put that at each single note in a symphony. Oh, what they can create, each single letter in a boardroom presentation. Oh, what can they destroy? I love that part. And I want to know what you meant in the ending when you said, I would hope not to be that memory of immortality to help set my love. Do you mean that you don't want, like, to be basically when someone dies, everyone has to think, oh, or has to express, oh, they're so good, or they become kind of almost a haunting memory because you remember their goodness, and you don't want that? You want the cumulative total? Or what was that meant to express?
Yeah, I appreciate the question, and I was actually thinking exactly what you said, but I was also more thinking of just the amount of input that we all kind of give on each other. So if, you know, thinking about Afasiana's question here of, are we, you know, who's carving us out? Are we being carved, or am I carving myself out? You know, how I've thought about this multiple times. How much of our input, or how much of us is the input that we have in there, as opposed to us actually thinking about it? You know, how many times can people, you know, say things to us over and over again until it becomes part of our own beliefs? So thinking about, you know, just being completely selfless and thinking, you know, instead of influencing my loved ones, you know, kind of like that Sting song, if you love somebody, set them free. You know, if I really, you know, care about the ones that I love, maybe I don't influence them. I let them go on their own and think their own thoughts and kind of live their own lives, as opposed to trying to, you know, influence, which we do, everybody around us. You and I are doing it right now to each other, right? Kind of talking and influencing,
yeah,
and changing each other's thoughts. So that's where I was going with that, really. And I appreciate the question.
That's really cool. I love it.
Thank you very much. Afasiana, I always love your comments.
I push so much pressure on, like, being able to say something intelligent here. I always love your poems. The part that both Pam and Mika pointed out, each single note in the symphony, oh, what they can create, each single letter in a boardroom presentation, oh, what they can destroy. I love, love, love that stanza. How every little piece of something has the potential to do something bigger, and it could be either for good or for bad. You can put those notes in a way that is beautiful. You can make it in a way the happy song. You can make a sad song. The different words could, destroy things, or they could potentially set the business on a good path. They could hurt someone, or they could help someone. Each letter could make many words, and those words could make many sentences, which could make many different kinds of presentations. So there's potential, and there's potential in each person to do great things or to do terrible things, or the person might be like a single note, and combined in the big community, or like larger than that of the world, have such a big impact depending on how they get arranged. So it's just a fascinating concept. You did a really great job of using the metaphors here. Really awesome. For some reason, it reminded me, there's this little boy who I was giving a tour to his class yesterday, or the day before yesterday, and he said to me, you know, I don't think dinosaurs had newspapers. And I was like, no, I don't think they did. And he was like, okay, but the world's probably more than 100 years old, right? So we all are part of it. And I was just like, the way he was just like so philosophical. I think we're a part of it. Yes, we are a part of the world. That's true. And it's more than 100 years old. And he was like, older than you? Like, yes, the world is older than me. But something about the way that you're talking about every second, every minute, it just made me think about that little boy's confused face. Older than you.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You could have had fun and told them that you were older than the world and you helped create it or something and really got into them. But I know you're supposed to be helping the kids and not confusing them. But that is interesting. Yeah, out of the mouths of babes, right?
Yeah. Little kindergarten kids, they just pick up everything. But it was just so funny. Like, he's dead serious looking at a newspaper going, I don't think dinosaurs had these.
Yes.
I get off track.
No, that stanza was interesting. I was just trying to think of the yin and yang, right? The so what's a good thing that you know little thoughts could come up with, and you know, a symphony, like a real symphony. And I was trying to think of something bad, and you know, the stereotypical is war or politicians and so forth. And I just thought of boardrooms, which I don't know if you guys are watching the news, but is it Elon Musk that took over Twitter, right? I guess apparently he took over Twitter and he decided to tell everybody that he's expecting extreme work from them. In other words, skipping lunches, working late hours, nobody working from home because he doesn't trust them to actually work really hard. And he kind of laid the hammer down and literally half the company walked out the door. So Twitter is right now literally closed because of that. And letters and boardroom presentations started that, so... That made me actually think about what I wrote today on that. But thank you, everybody. Appreciate the honor of reading in the comments. Let's get away from me and get on to some serious poets here. Who do we got next?
You are a serious poet, but there's one by not another poet. And Pam, would you read that for me, please?
I would be happy to. All right. This is Mind Effed by Not Another Poet. Last night I sat deserted, stripped naked, flesh peeled from bone, weighed life on scales forged from self-doubt. This man observed a boy still scared with half-chewed understanding. Rewinding chapters, I watched memories plummet from 1,000 cliffs, molding me into this helpless, self-conscious shell. Life's bewilderment faded into smoldering guns, tattered shrapnel remnants of shot-out eyes. I believed the untruths, where people were naturally good and beauty belonged to everyone, even the damned. All diamonds are flawed if you get close enough. I suffered the ins and outs of a retrofitted ideology that showed me to be less than a man is suspect. Military life isn't for children or poets or those whose sleeves burn with a thrumming heart. Nothing more than sacrificial pork for a vegan government, swirled in false ideology of friends, beer, porn, and God. I found my religion quickly. I learned to read people, a pretend phrenologist, gleaning crumbs with slow precision. Every relocation provided one more identity, another weapon for my arsenal. I knew how to fit in and stand out. Japan changed everything. I watched the sun rise over a 12,389-foot summit, witnessed my first miracle at 13. But that time has long passed, and the light has blanched these sunken eyes. I mirrored James Dean, cleared the last bend in self-defeat, the raging theme of an upside-down life, teeming reckless shame against the sinking epitome of failure. There is only so much to strip away before there is only silence. I'm terrified that it's true, that I am empty, that with nothing left there is no me. I've always written from my core. Perhaps this is why I struggle, because you're asking for something deeper. But underneath it all, I discovered my conviction rests in the curvature of my soul, where each weathered, sanded experience has polished my underlying belief. There is still a difference to be made. End poem.
That was a fantastic read, Pam, and what an amazingly deep and emotional poem that is. So I'm sure you guys are all going to comment on the great imagery and descriptions in here, but very interesting to really look back in your life. You know, myself, you know, I, like everybody else, you know, was kind of just running around experiencing life for a while, and then I really have no idea what happened between basically like 25 and 40. I have no idea what happened. So all of a sudden I was 40 and I just was going through life and working and doing whatever. And now, you know, I've only been writing poetry for a few years and so really been taking time to reflect and think back on things. And every time I think back as a kid, I wonder, like, how did I get here? You know, I was a little kid with ideas and dreams and all these things, and I'm here now, which I'm fine. I'm happy with my life, but so many mistakes I've made and so much, you know, so many different things I've gone through like everybody else, right? And you go back and think about that, you know, and a lot of it can be very, very painful, you know, either things that happened to you or you've been through or just dumb, stupid things or that you've done, that you did yourself that you can't believe you did, that you're ashamed of. There's so much in looking back. And just, you know, there's so many great metaphors in here, or descriptions, you know. Nothing more than sacrificial pork for a vegan government was very interesting to me. But I like the ending. I discovered my conviction rests in the curvature of my soul, meaning, you know, I'm taking that as, you know, it's not stagnant. It does kind of curve and bend, and you can follow the changes, right? Underlying belief, there's still a difference to be made. And that's what I kind of discovered when I was looking back and thinking at all of the mistakes and just the bad things and all this stuff is, it's the past. Just move forward. You know, forget about it. You know, I have the rest of my life to live, and I'm just going to kind of go forward and do the best I can do at this point and forgive myself and not worry about the bad things. So I thought this was a great reflection and a good kind of beginning to end. Really amazing. Really amazing poem. Mika, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I really love this. I really like the changes in perspective from the different sections. And I like that there is this push and pull or this tug of war between hope and despair in the piece. Like there's this almost sarcastic second section where he said, "I believe the untruths where people were naturally good and beauty belonged to everyone, even the damned." And he's saying, that's not true. All diamonds are flawed as you get close enough. And through these evolutions of learning how to read people and learning how to imitate them, there's these despairing moments. And then at the very end, the result is that no matter how much your mind pulls you to be terrified of the emptiness and the silence, you still come back to that underlying belief. No matter how cynical your whole life makes you, you still have this underlying belief that there is still a difference to be made, and so you keep on. I thought it was really inspiring.
Yeah, there's always hope till there's not, right? I mean, there's always hope. So, yeah, great. Thank you, Mika. And Faziana, what's going on with you?
I loved the third section. I suffered with the ins and outs of a retrofitted ideology that showed me to be less than a man is suspect. Military life isn't for children, or poets are those whose sleeves burn with a thrumming heart. I love that, those whose sleeves burn with a thrumming heart. It's like saying my heart is on my sleeve, but just the way that it's worded is brilliant. The connections that it makes, and also right before that section, all diamonds are flawed if you look close enough, you know, nothing is perfect, even if you're looking at something that you think is beautiful, and it is, it doesn't mean that it's just right. There's so much depth to this piece. I love it, and I like the way that it's broken down into the different sections. That ending is so powerful, where each weathered, sanded experience has polished my underlying belief. there's still a difference to be made. You know, even as their hard experiences, they end up polishing it, making it even more beautiful, that underlying belief, you know, the pressure that makes the diamond, despite all of the bad, making something beautiful. I think that's a really wonderful way to close it.
Excellent. Yes. Thanks, Faziana. If anyone is close to perfection, like Mary Poppins, right, practically perfect in every way, it is the beautiful Pam Ray. Pam, what'd you think?
Well, I don't know about that, but thank you. This is amazing. This is a fairly new poet to all poetry that is really impressing me. They had a write in one of my contests that I gave them a silver for. Really strong imagery and metaphors. I like how he right away delves into the idea of when you're writing something like this, when you're writing for a prompt that asks you to be personal, you feel stripped naked. I really liked this on the idea of how our experiences shape us and change us, and how after going through the military and going through life and these difficulties, he learns to become what people want him to become. And then near the end, there's this kind of awareness and understanding, you know, of being yourself. I really like those lines. I discovered my convictions rest in the curvature of my soul, where each weathered sandy experience has polished my underlying belief. I also like the line, I mirrored James Dean, cleared the last bend in self-defeat. It's all like the idea of mirroring James Dean comes across me, the idea of faking confidence and hoping people don't see beyond that. So excellent write and very well done.
I agree. The James Dean metaphor was very interesting, like, you know, portraying the movies, but, you know, somebody who was flawed. So excellent. All right. Let's continue on with life here. I wonder where we're going to go now.
Now we are going to listen to one by Robert M., who has given us a SoundCloud.
This is my recital of Shards of Disdain. Oftentimes I find myself reminiscing, looking back on the path that led me here. It is littered with fragments of self, pieces of me that I shed like scales of a wayward serpent in the forest of denial. Each piece a little more jagged and darker than the one before. Some seem to even pull other fragments in, imploding upon themselves in emotional accretion. How much of me was lost in the process? What is left of myself that I can even reference? Old molds shattered, while others are plied and grafted upon the reluctant frame. Sometimes just being is an endeavor in itself. The pebbles and dust of my former husk are no longer a viable representation of who I was, much less who or what I have become. I have done my diligence in self-reflection. I have searched my innards and fractal shards of disdain, and I am tired. After wading through the debris of a temple long collapsed and plundering the depths of sanity with a fine-tooth comb, I have come to realize that I am merely a byproduct of all of the destruction that I myself have created.
Thank you, Robert. Always an awesome read, and great self-reflection tonight. Very, very interesting and reflective back on you know the dark sides of a lot of people. I'm going to actually start with you, Faziana. What are your thoughts?
shed like pieces of me that I shed like the scales of a wayward serpent in the forest of denial. It's a vivid metaphor, that forest of denial, and like picturing the bits of him coming off like the snake scales, and just giving up certain pieces of his personality. After wading through the debris of a temple long collapsed and plundering the depths of sanity with a fine-tooth comb, I've come to realize I'm merely a byproduct of all the destruction that I myself have created. That is facing things with a harsh honesty, to take credit for the destruction around you and own it as like, I caused this. I am a byproduct of the problems, but at the same time, the problems are from me. So it's a cycle. But he has such beautiful wording of everything. He has an old fashioned kind of way of speaking, with really wonderful vocabulary, and he has a really great reading voice for the seriousness of his piece.
Yeah, you know, the reflection of people sometimes, it depends when it comes, can be very, very painful, but I think it's an important thing for people to kind of move on with life. And this is definitely, interesting reflection. And his voice is great. He always did a great read. Pam, how are you doing?
This is a wonderful read and write. I like the imagery in it. I too really like that line, pieces of me that I shed like scales of wayward serpent in the forest of denial. It's a wonderful poem of self-reflection and the realization that we're made of all the broken pieces of our life. And sometimes we are part of those, as Faye was saying, we are part of those broken pieces. And I think that as far as that's a very important realization, because it helps us to move forward. It helps us to break that cycle. I also really like how much of me was lost in the process. What is left of myself that I can even reference? Old mold shattered while others are plied and grafted upon the reluctant frame. I like the idea that the person, the old mold shatter represents the idea of the person that we once were is no longer the same person. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, sometimes we lose our way and lose ourselves. You know, we become things that aren't really us or that we don't want to be. Absolutely. Mika, I'm dying to hear what you think.
Oh, man, following up some really good comments. I think the part that I was most drawn to is the pebbles and dust of my former husk are no longer a viable representation of who I was, much less who or what I have become. I really love that because I relate to that sense of almost being lost within yourself and trying to find something recognizable by going back through your past, and it just isn't recognizable anymore. I don't know. That part spoke to me.
Yeah, absolutely. We all reflect sometimes, and thank you very much, Mika. All right, we got 10 minutes left. What would you like to do? Can we get a couple more in, or at least one?
Let's do another one. We have one by Pee-wee for this contest. I know we did one earlier from him, but different contest. And Mika, would you be willing to read that for us?
I would love to. Okay. Broken Promised Land by Pee-wee Cusson. so deliciously thin-skinned the veil masking your perceived reality. The world through your eyes was never to be the world that I see. Malicious intent gestating itself becomes grown in my complacency. Take a tortured brain, drive the nail that breaks it and makes it bleed. Just another lost mind round out swimming in a self-made sea of masochistic ways that infest for days time to numb it all, you'll see. Decades spent in the world made up of my false deities, empty room, needle spoon, and now it's time again to OD. But somewhere in the gloom, in the overwhelming haze, a voice comes to me I've known before, and I hear it say, I won't leave you. If you'll just take me by the hand, I know the way from this broken promised land. There's light ahead if you'll just go and let it in. This light will shine over you, absolving your internal sin. At first so slow the going, but more gained day by day. The agonizing hatred, loathing, and death in the air dissipate. Redemption comes as a voice somewhere inside within, buried there so deep, but still waiting to wash away the sin. I'll never leave you. Please take me by the hand. End poem.
Excellent, Mika. Thank you. You know, what was really interesting about your contest, Faziana, was, you know, when I first saw the pictures, like, oh, this is really positive. This is, you know, carving yourself out, making yourself better. And even I myself kind of went to a dark place. And it seems like where a lot of people are going when you do look internal and when you look at everything that has affected you and when you look at the way you've affected your own life, you do tend to really see the negative parts. But what's also been great is everyone's gone to a positive place, or most people have gone to a positive place as well, too. Redemption comes as a voice deep within, buried so deep still, waiting to wash away the sin. And where was the part that he said here? I forget. There was a part about how, you know, oh, there you go. At first, so slow the going, but more gain day by day. And you know, that is that the hardest part of anything, right? I don't know if anyone on here has quit drinking or quit drugs or cigarettes or anything like that. My boss is just quitting cigarettes now, and every time I talk to her, she's like, I'm 17 hours or whatever. You know, she's like counting the hours every time, and now she's on days. It's that hard, that beginning, that first part of looking at yourself and trying to make the changes is always the hardest part. And Pee Wee, I thought they just did a great job of self-reflection and kind of looking at that and how do you fix yourself and then realizing how to do it and kind of moving on. So beautifully reflective, Pee Wee. Great job. This is another awesome write by you. Pam, let's start off with you.
Yeah, this was a beautifully – oh, I am
sorry.
Back already.
You're back.
No
I was
going
to say you're gone, but you're here. Okay, go ahead.
And, yeah, this is amazing. I like how he delves into the idea, the addiction and the struggles of life and how these struggles mold and shape us into who we are. So it does look back on the negativity of life, but it also is a reminder of that, you know, that there can be a light, that there can be a shaping of self from those bad experiences. I really like there's a light ahead if you'll just go and let it in. This light will shine over you, absolving your eternal sin. At first, so slow the going, but more gain day by day. The agonizing hatred, loathing, and death in the air dissipate. The idea of learning to love and embrace yourself and finding your inner light. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, absolutely, Pam. And Pee Wee said for his own poem, it's been a long road, and yeah, it always is, right? The long and winding road, what a long, strange trip it's been. Lots of different songs written about that. So thank you, Pam. Thank you, Pee Wee. Mika, let's get your thoughts. You did a great read.
Thank you. This is a really cool poem. I think I really like that the voice doesn't just lead him, this poet, to the light, and then that's it. It feels like, especially at the end, that it's a continual thing, that redemption comes as a voice somewhere inside. No matter how deeply you bury it, it's always there saying you have an opportunity to take this take the step towards the light. And I think that's been a theme with a lot of the poems tonight, is that it's not something that is, it's just a victory, and you just get there, you get to the top of the mountain, and there you are, and you won. It's not like that. It's just, it's a constant choice to go back and to listen to that voice. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Mika. And Afaziana, you can let's hear your comments, and then I'll let you decide if we want to try to get another one in.
All right. I really loved the line, malicious intent gestating itself. I thought that was some great wording. And just overall, I thought it fit the prompt very well. Like you said, Dan, at first when I saw the pictures, I thought it would be sort of a positive thing, but at the same time, you know, if you're chiseling stuff away from your outside to make yourself your best self, it makes sense that you'd have to look at what are the negative aspects of yourself, and if you're trying to be your best self, what you have to chip away. So you have to face those issues to be able to take steps towards being who you want to be. You know, staying true to yourself, keeping your core, but at the same time, you know, always working to be your best. And I think that that's a difficult balance, is, you know, being yourself and also realizing the things about you that you might need to change. I can see how those sculpture images would bring that out in people. And I really appreciate the way that Pee Wee handled this. The title, too, Broken Promised Land, is a really great title. I suck at titles. I never know what to call my things. And I'm impressed when people, like, make a thoughtful title that works with things. So, Pee Wee, I envy your ability to do that. Shout out to Felon on the board, who said, sorry I missed the show, but I was working for you, Faziana, because she entered one of my contests. So she was writing and recording a song for one of my contests. So I forgive you, Fel, because I'm excited for your song. And,
that's
and
a good
she has
excuse,
submitted
right?
A poem
we can
to
accept,
the... we yeah.
can accept that excuse, I guess, yeah.
I do, yeah. She's writing for me, so that's allowed. we, unfortunately, I don't think have time to read the rest. We do have two carryovers. For some reason, in my crazy head, I thought we had until 9:30, just because I'm mixed up about my shows, because Part Sinner, Part Saints ends on the half hour. So I was actually like, oh, no, I need to dig up two more poems because it's going to be too short. And then, no, actually, I've run out of time. don't put me in charge of timing. So they were wonderful poems tonight. Thank you so much, Pam and Mika, for calling in, giving us your comments, and sharing your voices. Dan, you've been awesome to have here as co-host, so I really appreciate you being here, as Dex has to be away. And everyone who wrote poems, wonderful poetry, to Mr. Mike, not Mr. Mike, God, Robert, Mr. M used to be his name, Robert, thank you for doing a SoundCloud. I really like getting SoundClouds where you can hear it in the poet's own voice. Blog Talk is telling me to stop talking. So that is all for us, and you can stay tuned. In half an hour, Pam has another show, so check that out. Have a great week, everyone.
Thank you, everybody. Take care.
Great show, guys.